Hare Krishna and good morning. Hare Krishna. I'm sure it's not a very long time since I was sitting here last time, but it seems ages. Ages and ages. How are you all? Are you well? You're still alive and still keen, so that's a good sign. Today's a very special day. The beautiful appearance day of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, upon whom much of our Krishna consciousness movement, as we enjoy it and explore it and spread it today, was founded. So let's begin with one of the verses that was composed in his honor. Can the gentleman in the far right over there, can you see it? Do we need just a fraction? I know it's Ladies' Day on a Monday, but let the men have just a little bit. Now, men, now you know what it's like to be on the receiving end of the untwisted board. Perennial problem in all of ISKCON's temples. Nama Om Vishnu. Oh, excuse me. Yes. Get my head in order. This is his first one. Second one was Shivarashavanavi Devi Dayataya Kripabdaye. This was written because his name given to him by his spiritual master, who was Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. It's a long name, actually. ISKCON did not invent triple barrel names. Varshavanabi Devi Dayata Das. Long name, isn't it? Varshavanabi means the lover of Krishna. Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daini Prabhave Namaha. Favored by Srimati Radharani. Madhuryo Jala Premadya Shri Rupanuga Bhaktida Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostate. Obeisances to the personified energy of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, who delivers devotional service enriched with the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. The reason why we read these prayers, when Prabhupada was asked to tell something of his guru, Maharaj, he just said, what can I say? He was a Vaikuntha man. And sort of says it all. What can I say? He was a Vaikuntha man. Because at the time, we didn't know any details at all. What did we know? We didn't even know anything about Prabhupada, what to speak of his Guru Maharaj. So when we investigate the personality of servitor Godhead in the form of a guru, we explore what is known as the Taniyam, or what in ISKCON we call the Pranam Mantras. So these are the mantras that have been written by dedicated disciples to delineate the particular characteristics of the guru. So we go to today's verse, which is the fourth of these. Namaste Gauravani Srimurtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Viruda Apasidanta Dvanta Harine. Namaste Gauravani Srimurtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Viruda Apasidanta. We do that wrong every year, don't we? Really, that word splits. But the compound makes the A, one A, disappear. It's really Viruda. Rupanuga Viruda. Apasidanta Dvantarine. Kind of. So, you can say that a person's life is summarized by sayings attributed to them, or sayings attributed about them. And these four verses that we recite occasionally, certainly on special occasions, are indicative of the most important things that he gave. Just like with our own Srila Prabhupada, we say, Namaste Saraswati Devi, you gave his teachings to the world. Which world? Paschatya Desh, the Western world. Unique quality. This is a verse written by one of his disciples. Nikila Bhuvanamaya Chinavichina Kartri Vibhuda Bahula Mrigya Mukti Mohanta Datri Sitilita Vidiragara Dhyaradesha Dani Vilasatu Hridi Nityam Bhakti Siddhanta Vani. English translation. With his first step, he cut to pieces the whole plane of exploitation, and with his second, he crushed the speculation of scholars of salvation and liberation. With his third, he softened Vaidhi Bhakti with a touch of divine love. Taking us beyond Vaikuntha, he has introduced us to the highest worship of Sri Radha and Govinda. So let us take the first of these qualities. Namaste Gauravani, Shimurataye, you are the personification of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How difficult is it to repeat what someone has told you? Apparently, it's really hard. Apparently, it's really hard. That is why, if you go on the internet, and I'm not suggesting that you do, and you type in, oh, I don't know, something like the real teachings of Srila Prabhupada, what do you think you'll discover? What do you think you will discover? You'll discover the real teachings or what someone thinks are the real teachings? You might discover both and then come away very confused. Just like Chinese whispers, which we do as a training game sometimes. You whisper, so you didn't quite hear it, but now your job is to pass it on. So you pass it on to the next person. But because it was a whisper and not very clearly spoken and not very clearly heard, the next person hears something a little bit different. If you have 10 people in the room who are all playing the game, at the end, it's ridiculous. And the reason why the game is funny is because you can't believe that in only 10 communications, it's got so badly wrong. Well, now imagine a parampara that goes for 2,000 years. 2,000 years of Chinese whispers. So Vedic culture solved the problem. That you take a Vedic mantra, and it's the Vedic mantra that gets passed on. And everything lies on the pronunciation. And the bhashya, the commentary to those mantras, is relevant for each generation. But it's the mantras that get passed on. So in our particular line, both are important, of course. But you'd be surprised how many times it's easy to get it wrong. And therefore, there are many branches of disciplic succession. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's job was to pass on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not so easy, because in 500 years, the teachings have become very deviated, so colorfully deviated that you can imagine the worst day of the worst temple of the worst period in any country in ISKCON's history over the past 70 years. And that is only a fraction of what the average so-called temple dedicated to the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked like in the time when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching. Bhaktivinoda Thakur not only had to revive the pure teachings, but also had to rediscover the Chaitanya Charitamrita, of which there was no published copy. Imagine a country where they say they follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but there's no Chaitanya Charitamrita. Imagine there's no guru that you can go to where, you know, you won't be exploited, or who has not been compromised by either Buddhism or Islam or Mayavad. This was a situation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur counted 13 upa sampradayas. Upa sampradaya means blind. So a blind sampradaya is like a blind well. You get initiated and you fall down, down, down to the bottom, and you may never get out. So apasiddhanta is that which is contrary to siddhanta. Siddhanta means the final conclusion, siddhanta. Final conclusion is that which will free you from the material world. Apasiddhanta means that which will bind you more closely to the material world. It's very important you get it right. But if there's no teachers available, what will you do? You'll go for the nearest possible person that looks like something that you could. Just like when a baby duck is born. Baby duck comes out of the egg, and the first person standing there will be its mother. And you see these researchers watching the eggs hatch. When the baby duck sees the human being, it'll immediately begin quacking, "Mama, mama." So in the same way, people are very lazy in Kali Yuga, so they go to a guru figure or a father figure that is closest. We don't want to make much effort. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati knew that two jobs he had to do. One was to preserve the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and also to pass it on by giving as many opportunities locally that people could take to it. Hence, in his very short lifetime of preaching, 15 years or so, something like that, 15, 20, between, he was initiated in 1900, and he passed away from this world in early 1937, so that's 37 years of preaching. So in that short time, 64, that means opening two temples a year, doesn't it? Something like that. Two temples a year. The only reason you do that is because you are Gauravani, Shrimurtaye. You not only embody the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but you really want to spread them. This is the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Teaching means spreading, and spreading means geography. Don't try to get away from it. Otherwise your teaching will be tinged with, the Goshtianandi will be tinged with Bhajananandi, which seems like an easier thing to do, but it's not. So, what are the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Does anybody know? And at this moment, Nishkinchan Chaitanya walks into the room, responsible for the whole school of bhakti, teaching the undiluted teachings of Chaitanya. We're depending on you. let's see. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura had been very clear. He wanted to take the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as recorded by Kavi Karnapur and Baladeva Jibhushana and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when you're synthesizing teachings, it's rather like being stuck in a lift with a very important person that you kind of know that you should preach to, but you're not quite sure how to do it. They say, can you take the whole message of your life and put it into a 30-second or a 2-minute blurb that you could speak to someone in a lift, so that by the time you got to the top of the building, that person was convinced, yes, I shall do as you say. Can you do that? One time in Amsterdam, they said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, there's the Hare Krishna temple, the Radha Krishna temple is going on. They've given us 3.5 minutes to chant, but they only want you to speak for 3 minutes. He said, fine. He said, I can speak for just a few seconds. I can speak for 3 hours, 3 days, or 3 minutes. So in 3 minutes, just the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. What would you say? I'm going to give you two examples. Two examples. You're in a lift, and you're dealing with a philanthropist, and he's just on the verge of giving a charity £1 million. Okay? And you're stuck in the lift with him. Your job is to explain Krishna consciousness in such a way that this very serious person who wants to give money to a worthy cause believes that you the teachings, which will be the most worthy cause for human beings in 2022. What do you say? You don't have to all speak at once. But that's what I'd like to pose to you. The second thing is something I was told when I was 19. When I was 19, the temple president of Bhaktivedanta Manor, he said, Kripa Moya. He said, you have to know everything. He said, I want you to know Krishna consciousness as if you went to a desert island or an island where there were people. And you could start the whole Krishna consciousness movement all over again just by yourself. He said, are you ready? We are sending you to Grimsby. So the point is, could you start the whole Krishna consciousness movement over again? I know I could probably say something about the philosophy, but there would be no Sunday feast because I can't cook. Some of you can cook, but you don't like speaking. Some of you can speak and cook, but you don't like singing. Someone gives you a pair of cartels and you react as if it's got the plague. Or they come towards you with a microphone and you go, oh, no, 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 not me, not me. So we have to be, each of us, prepared. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was prepared not only to continue the work of his father establishing the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but to expand them in places where they'd never been properly taught before. Now you may say, well, come on, how difficult could it be? It's India. Everybody in India knows Krishna. Of course. And the reason why it's so difficult to preach in India is because everybody knows Krishna already. I know these things. My father was a great devotee. My grandfather was a guru. You ever heard that before? Everybody knows everything. And yet, at the same time, as Prabhupada expressed, he said, it is hodgepodge. So in the eastern part of Bengal, there were followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had a very good reception. He initiated his first sannyasi and sent him to preach in East Bengal, which we now call Bangladesh. They were worshippers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for hundreds of years and worshippers of Radha and Krishna. But on the western side of Bengal, what we now call West Bengal, or just Bengal, they were worshippers of Durga and Kali. So it was a little harder to preach. So anyway, one has to be very astute and know the essential teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here they are, written down by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as distilled from the teachings of Kavi Karanapur, Baladeva Vijabhushana, etc. First one is, and you can recite very loudly because I know my voice is a little monotone at the moment, so it's driving you to sleep. Praman. Sit up straight. Say, take a deep breath and say, Praman.
Praman.
The teachings of the Vedas.
Teachings of the Vedas.
Ladies, you can slouch and mumble, it's okay. It's your day today, just relax. But these boys, they need a bit of extra. Number two. Say number two.
Number two.
Paramatattva.
Paramatattva.
Srihari alone.
Srihari alone.
Is the supreme absolute truth.
Is the supreme absolute truth.
Number three.
Number three.
Sarva-shaktiman.
Sarva-shaktiman.
Shri Krishna.
Shri Krishna.
Is the possessor. Of all potency. I'll quiz you on this afterwards. Number four. Akila. Rasamrita. Sindhu. He is the ocean of nectarian mellows. Number five. Vibhinamsha Tattva.
Both the liberated soul
and the conditioned soul are his eternally separated parts and parcels. Please drive this into your heads. Number six.
Baddha Jivas.
Conditioned souls are subject to control and covering of Maya. Number seven, Mukta Jivas. Liberated souls are free from Maya. Number eight, Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. The entire universe, consisting of the conscious and unconscious, is Sri Hari's manifestation, inconceivably both different and non-different from him. Number nine, Shuddha Bhakti. Pure devotional service is the only practice to attain perfection. Number ten, Krishna Priti. Transcendental love and affection for Krishna is the one and only object of attainment. Good. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for allowing me to treat you as children. It does wonders for my male ego. But these things should be inside our heads. And actually every document, every preaching leaflet should spring from this. You notice, actually, very interesting. We'll go on to the next section. Very interesting. There's no reincarnation in that. Have you noticed? There's no henna painting, no sari triumphs, no face painting. There's no cooking classes. This is a solid Siddhanta. We get onto bridge preaching in a minute. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was teaching Rupa Goswami, it's very simple. Jiva Surupa Hoy, Krishnara Nityadas, that's right. Tatasta Shakti Beda Beda Prakash, Krishna Buli Se Jiva Anadi Barahir Mukha Ataeva Mayatari Deya Samsara Dukha. So Krishna is the Supreme, the soul is an eternal servant of Krishna. The souls come from the marginal energy of Krishna. Having forgotten Krishna, the soul wanders through the universe, covered by illusion. The soul goes through covering. That's the sort of, you know. And then he says, Brahmanda Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bhiji. Yes, you know that one. Then he says, Naham Vipro. Yes, very good. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. We come from Krishna. We suffer by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. We attain bhakti. Being reinstituted in our situation means to understand I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. These things are the essential teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personified in the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But now here's the problem. How do you give that to people? This is a problem. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was sitting on a roof with a disciple, they were looking at a Harinam party coming back. And the disciple said to his Guru Maharaj, he said, see that boy there? He's going to make a very good disciple one day. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati turned to him and he said, you wait until the harvest is in the godown. Meaning, godown is a place where you put your harvest after it's been harvested. So many things can happen between the rice growing in the field and the rice being stored nice and dry in the shed. You can have storms, you can have weeds, birds, caterpillars, beetles, thieves, cows. Anything can take the harvest away. Rain can destroy it in a day. So therefore, in between a person being a nice prospect for devotional service and a person sitting at the initiation yajna, which is not safe, but at least it's a commitment, there's a long distance. What was his point? Tell me what his point was. Anybody? Yes, as we would say in chicken watching society here in the West. But no, that's true. That's the example I was thinking. You may not eat chickens. You may not eat eggs. You can still watch chickens hatch. It's bona fide. Bona fide. Nothing wrong with watching chickens hatch. But don't count them before they're hatched. Because when they're hatched, you'll know that you have chickens. Before that, you just have an egg. So his point was, when you see a person who's in the nascent stage of taking to Krishna consciousness, when they seem to be exhibiting all the symptoms of someone, then it's very good, but they need protecting. They need protecting. So part of Dina Tarine, uplifting the fallen, is protecting them so they don't fall back down. Seems a bit of common sense, doesn't it? So in any movement, such as ours, dedicated to the spreading of the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have to equally be interested in the protection of someone so that they don't fall back into memory loss, amnesia, into the whirlpool of material energy. And how do we do that? It's called, it's called one word, begins with S. It's called Sangha. We give our Sangha. We give our Sangha. So, moving on. How did he give his Sangha? How did he give the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? We would call Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati today a real super bridge preacher. Do we still use that terminology, or is that old even now? You know, we used to say bridge preaching when something was an unusual entrance into Krishna consciousness. I don't know whether we still say it now. We do? We say it up until the point when someone jokes about the person staying on the bridge and not coming across it. Yeah, probably. So whatever we call it. So he had newspapers. One of the first things he did after, get this, he takes sannyas, and what is he interested in after taking sannyas? But a printing press. You know, the first thing that he did after taking sannyas was open a temple, the Gandharvika Girigidari Jew temple in what we now call the Chaitanya Math. And in Calcutta, in the city, he opens up a printing press. It wasn't the first time that he dabbled with print media, but this was the internet of the day. But get this, he wanted to establish a printing press, and you know how people are really on top of, you know, fake news and sedition and unhelpful, you know, what we got on the internet today. We have fact checkers, don't we? Fact checkers. And if you don't produce something on social media that is accurate, you'll be cancelled, or you'll have your followers taken away from you. Everybody knows, don't they? You know, nice guy, you know, like Mr. Jordan Peterson or someone like that. Good ideas. He's saying things, though, that are not very popular. And you start losing your followers because there's a follower count. And suddenly, you've lost 50,000 followers in a night. Well, what happened? They all got up and left? No, they were stripped away by media censorship, which is run by the big tech companies. So we know it's going on. Everybody knows it's going on, but it's not a new thing. So before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could establish his printing press, the first rule was that you can't establish a printing press in the countryside. It was illegal. Britain ran India. And they didn't want fake news coming out of the Bengali countryside. And Bengal was a hotbed. Always a hotbed. These Bengalis, Budarishi, Bengalis are a hotbed of sedition. Anytime you've got a coup going on in a temple, look out for the Bengalis. They'll be waving the flag and getting everybody to print the fake news. So the British, for whom Calcutta was the capital, they passed a law saying no printing presses in the countryside. Second law, if you do want to run a printing press in Calcutta, we have to see what you're printing and see whether it matches up to what the British will allow you to print. Because otherwise you could be printing something against the king. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had already, as a deputy magistrate, he'd already been sent by the British to get rid of Bishaki Sen, not because he was dancing with young girls in the midnight and calling himself Krishna, but because he was publishing pamphlets about Queen Victoria and how bad she was and how the British should just get out of India. By doing so, he became popular, but he also brought the British down on him in the form of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we always think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a Bengali. Actually, he was an agent of the British. You know, he was, and that he brought with him 24 men with guns to arrest Bishaki Sen, specifically because the British couldn't control someone for practicing their religion. So if your religion of Hinduism says that you can dance with young maidens in the middle of the night calling yourself Krishna, what do we care? That's just Hinduism. We've already written you off. But if you say anything about our Queen Victoria, we'll smash you and we'll take away your printing press. So it was an ongoing thing from the late 1800s, 1880s, right through to this time. So he had to get approval. So it took a month to get approval. This is his first action to get the printing press. He eventually did a weekly magazine. They said, how can you do a weekly magazine about Krishna consciousness? He said, I could do a daily one. He said, you don't know? There's so much news coming from the spiritual world. He said, everything is changing every day. It's not boring at all. So then he had a steamship. This is in his later. He had a steamship with parties of devotees going up and down the Ganges doing Harinam. There's an idea for you, Govinda. He would have loved what you were doing because he had a map of London in his office. And on this map of London, he knew where Buckingham Palace was, he knew where Kensington was. And he said, we're going there, we're going to do Harinam all over London. So you're fulfilling Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's dream. Oh, really? And of course you said, yes, for this very reason I was born, so that the Queen of England may hear cartels of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But you didn't. You carried on, yeah. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also met, of course, the person who later on went to become the Home Secretary, the Governor of Bengal. And he built the road. That Bhaktisiddhanta road was built by thousands and thousands of volunteers when they knew that the governor of Bengal was coming. So we still use that road today from the dock up to Yogapit. Yogapit? Up to the Chaitanya Mart. So he was very discreet with anybody remotely connected to the British establishment. He thought big. He was thinking big. Anyway, we... The Queen has so many Bhagavad Gitas now. She has a stack of them. Because everywhere she goes all over the world, a devotee thinks, I must give the Queen of England a Bhagavad Gita. Thinking himself or herself to be the very first person to have done so, she's got a stack of them. And she has actually read quite a bit. She read Bhagavad Gita solidly for 2 hours once. Do you know that? I don't know if you know the 50 pence piece. When they were designing those in 1970, there was a sculptor, and he was coming, David Wynne was a sculptor, and he was coming to the London Temple. And he said, I'm just off today to sculpt the Queen. She's doing a sitting for the new Queen's head on the 50 pence coin. You know, new coins were coming in 1970. And so for 2 hours he was sculpting her, but he took along a Bhagavad Gita. She read it. And after she read it for 2 hours and the sitting had finished, she said, wouldn't it be nice if everybody could follow these teachings? That's exactly what she said. Hare Krishna. So, one of his first followers was a chap called Kunja Bihari, who later on became Kunja Babu, who later on became Bhakti Vilas Tirtha. Anyway, he had been a member of the... Are we finishing at 8:30? We are kind of, aren't we? Can we go to 8:45? Yeah. So he had been a member of what is called as the Ramakrishna Mutt. And the Ramakrishna Mutt, so-called Paramahamsa Ramakrishna, and the, what's it called? Yogananda. Paramahamsa Yogananda? Yes. So they had an organization in which there were no sannyasis, but everybody was dressed in saffron. And they'd crisscrossed Bengal, not only with their Mayavad philosophy, but also their charity work. Now, if there's one thing that gets people excited about a religious movement, is charity work. You cannot argue with charity work, especially if you're feeding people or, you know, holding babies or doing whatever it is you do. Everybody knows, every politician wants to be seen, every politician, every pope wants to be seen in public kissing a baby. It's the best possible photograph. Don't get any ideas, Sutapa. Sannyasis don't kiss babies. Well, okay, maybe some of them do. Anyway, that's the money shot everybody wants. And the other money shot is handing out food to the hungry. If your organization does that, everybody knows, isn't it? That's why we love it, that at least another branch of our organization is giving out thousands of meals in London. We may not have anything to do with that anymore, but we will display that photograph very happily. Just see what we're doing. We, meaning ISKCON, we're feeding people in London. Anyway, because we know that that's very popular. What was my point? Russell, huh? Yes, Ramakrishna Mission. So they had done that. So Kunja Bihari came, and he, you know, he'd fallen out with the mission. But he'd been their manager. He'd been one of the general managers. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saw that this was just, you know, an arrangement by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, so what should we do in our movement? He said, well, we'd get all the brahmacharis to wear saffron. Because until that time, there was no saffron in the Gaudiya movement. Sanatana Goswami had said that saffron, is that wearing of saffron conditions the mind to impersonalism. So there was no saffron. Six Goswamis didn't wear saffron, and all the way down they didn't wear saffron, they were all Babaji's. That was our movement, up until the fateful moment when Kunja Bihari had this conversation with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And then suddenly, you know, why do you wear saffron in ISKCON? Well, it's a tradition. Goes back thousands of years, back to the Vedas. We'll try 1918. Of course, now we've reversed that tradition and no one wears saffron except young Smarahari here. There's no saffron in the room. Prabhuji over here, you older Prabhus do. Pravin does. Paramakrishna, yes. And Prabhuji over there wears saffron. There's a few saffron wearers. So the trend for wearing saffron... I walked into the temple, I had hair down to here. They said, wear a dhoti. I said, okay, what's that? They said, if you find it in the cardboard box over there, we'll show you how to put one on. So for a couple of weeks, I was walking around, hair down here with a saffron dhoti and it's probably a cheesecloth shirt or something. But he had everybody in saffron. Did it look nice? Did everybody in Bengal love it? They did, of course they do. Everybody loves saffron, especially the women. Hare Krishna. And he was into Western preaching. Oh, don't get me started. He was into Western preaching. What did he mean by Western preaching? Preaching to the Westerners. Where do they live? In the West. So he sent his preachers to London. Of course, you know, London and Berlin, and they were funded. They were funded to the tune of, I think it was 7,000 rupees a month or something. It was very expensive. And anyway, you all know the mixed results of that. But one of the results, which we didn't know about for a long time, was this preacher called Sadananda, who took initiation. He was a German, took initiation. He went to Sweden, and he started a movement on behalf of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in Sweden. And there are still publications by that movement in Sweden, in Swedish. But there's also recordings of him giving class in English on Nectar of Devotion from the 1940s. They were taped completely, you know, before anything else, before Prabhupada had come and everything. So just, you know, Krishna consciousness is very catching. And there are still some followers. There's just a handful. He had about 20 people, and it shrunk to about 5. And now there's one lady still. But it's still something. Something has gone on since the 1920s. So, but part of his preaching, part of Dinatarane, part of uplifting the fallen and giving them Krishna consciousness, which is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is rejecting everything which is not the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said that I came to give pure love for Radha and Krishna. He said, but all my life I have spent hacking at the jungles of sense gratification and impersonalism. So he was thinking, I came to give the highest thing, but all my life I've spent hacking away at the jungles of sense gratification and impersonalism. And those of us who are preaching, sometimes doesn't it feel like that? You know, you want to give pure Krishna consciousness, and then people just want to dilute it, or they want to misrepresent it, or they want to forget it and reinvent it. And, you know, such and such a person comes to be a devotee for a couple of weeks and then, you know, leaves and, you know, returns to their ordinary life. And sometimes as a preacher, you just sit down and you think, what am I doing? What am I doing with my life? I could have had such a happy life. Why did I take to Krishna consciousness? Why did I preach Krishna consciousness? No one seems to take to it. And those that take to it don't stay in it for long. And imagine what Prabhupada thought. Imagine how Prabhupada felt. Even before Prabhupada left, his disciples were leaving him. Sometimes people like to misrepresent history. They like to say, well, when Prabhupada was here, he had 5,000 disciples and everybody was strong and happy because Prabhupada was in the... As soon as Prabhupada left, then other people took over the movement and everybody... No, it wasn't like that at all. People left Prabhupada long before Prabhupada left the world. They were always leaving. Because Krishna consciousness, despite us saying what Prabhupada said, where is the difficulty? It is hard with the competition of sense gratification and impersonalism. So removing those two has to be done, and it has to be done very strongly. Now here's the thing, it's something that we don't do very much. Sutapa, I've yet to see you do it. Vishwambha, I've yet to see you do it. I see Vishwambha as Mr. Nice, Mr. Bhagavad Gita, but Mr. Nice, always being... I've never seen Vishwambha angry. Come to think of it, I've never seen Govinda angry. I've never really seen Sutapa angry. But part of Virudapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine is getting angry at nonsense. And it's something that Prabhupada did. And a few people after Prabhupada did, but this technique of getting angry at nonsense has sort of left our movement. I don't quite know why. We're trying to be nice, nice, nice to everybody all the time. You can kill a person with niceness, did you know? You can kill a person with niceness. You can actually bring the end of a person's life by being too nice. So mark my words. Establishing Krishna consciousness cannot be done with niceness. It has to be done with debate, forceful presentation, strong presentation, without losing it, but at the same time being very convinced and saying, that is wrong. I'm afraid you've spoken incorrectly. You don't have to say, that's fake news. But occasionally we have to get into that mode. There was a great disciple of Madhvacharya. His name was Vadiraj Tirtha, and he was known as Hammermouth. Hammermouth. And Hammermouth, everywhere he went, people, the Mayavadis would would run. One time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati went, he crossed the street to a Mayavadi teacher, and he grabbed him by the ankles and he turned him upside down. These are the escapades that when you're preaching Krishna consciousness very strongly, you know. So a hammer mouth was teaching, and everything that came out of his mouth, it said, was like a hammer against Mayavad. And this is the difficulty, folks. This is the difficulty, because in the present era, where we're all singing in yoga studios, where everything is Om Shanti, 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 and everybody's hands are like this, and peace. We just want to align our chakras and feel the peace. The difficulty is that we are being called upon by His divine grace to preach very strongly. That actually all this aligning chakras is not going to do you any good because you're going to die. But we have to do that in such a way as we seem very, very intelligent. Now, it can go completely the everybody hates a Bible basher, or what they call they named the band after this phenomenon, the Manic Street Preachers. Everybody hates the Manic Street Preacher. There was a Manic Street Preacher when I used to go on Harinam in 1974. He used to stand at the corner of Leicester Square. And you've seen many cartoons of a billboard that says, "The end is nigh." Now, that's a joke now. As you see, it's sort of a cliche. But this man and his friends, grim-faced, dressed in grey, they had a billboard that said, "The end is nigh." This was their preaching for many, many years. Every time we went on Harinam, I think we deliberately went a little bit too close to them. Haribo! But the point is that this type of preaching takes us to an area where we don't want to be that. At the same time, if we go too much the other way, and we're always nice, when you go to a doctor, the doctor has to be truthful. And the truth may not be nice, because you may need to know the truth, delivered in a palatable way, in a way that you can understand, but at the same time, doctors can't compromise on the truth. Neither should you, when you go to a doctor, be expecting anything less than the truth. These four people you should always be truthful to, and they should always be truthful to you. Your doctor, your accountant, your lawyer, God, what's the other one? And your priest or guru. You should always be truthful with them, they should always be truthful. That's called a fiduciary relationship. So now, sometimes we have to be the arbiters, well, not all the time we have to be the arbiters of what is the right thing to say to these people. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was very, very strong when he knew that he could get away with it. And I've heard from one of his disciples, who was still alive when I met him. He was in his 90s. He said, with the Grihasthas, he used to tell jokes and stories. Now, we don't think of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when we see his image like this, we don't think of him telling jokes, do we? We don't think of him telling stories. But with the Grihasthas, he was very, very pleasant and humorous. Because Grihasthas, their life is hard enough. Our life is so hard. We're struggling with the material energy. But the brahmacharis and sannyasis, hammer mouth. He was so hard with his sannyasis, they couldn't even go to a dentist. They didn't have shoes. They didn't have shoes. He didn't let them wear shoes. So it's hard, isn't it? So we have to be the judges, but I'm saying on balance, we don't do as much of the debate and the pointing out the difficulties in that. We'd rather be pleasant and popular. However, a spiritual movement that tries to be popular is a spiritual movement that ultimately becomes unpopular. Usually. Because the people that you attract when you want to be popular will leave you at a certain point when you want to be strong. Understood? Just like, anyway, there's different phenomena, but if you are austere and simple, then the people that you attract will also be austere. They'll work for nothing. So it's basically what Prabhupada did. You got young people who worked for nothing, who lived together. My God, living together, that's tough. And who were prepared to be strong as he was. So he modeled the strength in his preaching, and we copied that. And that's why you get a lot of, you know, zealous fanatics who try their best but didn't quite get the balance right. But we shouldn't consign that to the history books because it's still required, but in a more intelligent way. Okay? I'm going to go. I'm not going to go. So how did he do that? So this is a line that he composed. Prabhupada talked about it, actually. He said, this is Prabhupada talking. He said, we should be very honest and live with the sadhus, those who are devotees. Tandera charana sevi bhakta sanivas. First of all, our mission should be how to serve the Goswamis. You cannot act independently. So then he talks about this principle of following the Goswamis. I'll condense it. No, we have to step aside. So, the interesting thing is that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati got it right. He got the balance right. Which you can only, so part of being a preacher is that you judge who you've got in front of you. And Prabhupada did that first by listening. I don't know if you've ever seen those sets of books, the conversation books. Those conversation books are very telling towards Prabhupada's teaching method, which he got from his Guru Maharaj. Because half of them are the other person speaking. Prabhupada doesn't interrupt. He listens to the other person to very finely gauge what I can say to this person, how to say it in the best possible way that I can give them something attractive. So that's, you know, that's an interesting thing. Listening is the first part of preaching. The second part of preaching is preaching. And the essential part of preaching is twofold. One is to give the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One is to delineate what's not the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You understand? Both are equally important. So let's just go through a brief biography. I'll call out the year and you can tell me something. 1874. He's born. That's right. And where was he born? This is where you wake up. Jagannath Puri. That's right. 6 months later, Rath Yatra came. What happened at Rath Yatra? The garland fell and decorated around his neck. And in 1886, his father, Kedaranath Datta, was given the title Bhakti Vinod, yes. So when he was, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was a young man, his name was what? Vimala Prasad, that's right. And he came. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was said, prayed for someone who would help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So he came in as a result of that. He started in 1892. What happened? When he was 17, 18, he was going to college. Started something called the August Assembly. August Assembly. And he was a celibate. He told his father he didn't want to get married. Big problem. So then his father, this conversation comes to us. I don't know where it comes from, but it's on the Gaudiya Math website. So it's probably Sundarananda Vidyavinod, who was called the Ganesh of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says to him, oh, if you do not want to go to the life of a grihastha, what will you do? Saraswati Thakur. I want to dedicate my life to the exclusive service to Mahaprabhu. This is my life's goal. Bhaktivinoda. Then you must take charge of Mayapur. Bhaktisiddhanta. It is a very high and hard service, but I have a renounced mentality, and I will not be able to maintain this Mayapur Seva properly. There are too many hazy elements and disturbances there. I cannot tolerate that. Bhaktivinoda, if you cannot tolerate some disturbance for Mahaprabhu, then what will you do? For Mahaprabhu, you must tolerate everything. And you cannot tolerate some small disturbance? This world is not Vaishnav's world. It is actually a Mayavadi place. But I think you are not a Mayavadi. Are you? Bhaktisiddhanta, no, I'm not a Mayavadi, that is for sure. But this service is very hard for me. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, do not worry. Mahaprabhu will help you. In 1894, Jagannath Das Babaji comes into the picture. So Bhaktisiddhanta didn't know him at that time. He comes in. 1896, what happened? Bhaktivinoda publishes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Life and Precepts. Of course, Prabhupada is born. In 1897, someone else comes into the picture. Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. He's been doing bhajan in Vrindavan for 30 years and he wants to come and see. He's heard stories about a new revival of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. And 3 years later, reluctantly, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is initiated by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. He gave him three instructions. Don't make disciples. Don't associate with anyone. Anyone. And don't go into the mire of Calcutta. So someone asked him afterwards, a couple of years later, when of course he'd made disciples, established a printing press and a temple in Calcutta, and was associating with all worldly people. He says, so your guru gave you three instructions. So how have you followed those? He said, no. He said, I haven't initiated anybody. He said, but you have disciples. He said, no, they've come to me. I don't see them as disciples. If they choose to see me as guru, that's another thing. He said, well, he said, don't associate with anybody. But you go, he said, no. Association means to take their association. I only give mine. But he said, don't go into Calcutta because it's Maya. He said, no, I never go to Calcutta. He said, but you established a temple there. He said, no, that is Vaikuntha. So then he was on a boat and someone said to him, does it cause a problem for you that your guru is a bhajananandi and that you're a goshtianandi? Bhajananandi means one who takes pleasure from private worship. Goshtianandi means one who wants to increase the number of followers, the goshti. He said, no. He said, just like now we're on a boat. He said, and on the boat, there is a battery. It wasn't a rowboat, not like Boatman and the Scholar. It was one of those chuggers. Chug, 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 chug. He said, on the boat, there's an engine. He said, but behind the engine, there is a battery. And this battery is silent, hidden, but everything else on the boat is depending on this battery. So my Guru Maharaj, chanting his japa, 64, 70, 80 rounds a day, he said, he is my silent source of energy, which I thought was a nice. He said, he's always there for me. He said, and I'm moving only by his power. So then he went to, interesting period, he went to Puri, I'll finish soon. He went to Puri and stayed there for 2 years with his father. And they were trying to, do many different things and establish Krishna consciousness there. Then in 1905, he did what for me is a very interesting thing. He spent the whole year in South India. He went to see the Madhvas. He went to see the Sri Vaishnavas. He spoke to sannyasis. He went to see the Nimbarkas. And he collected books. He collected books on Vaishnavism. Ostensibly, it was to prepare a book called Vaishnava Manjusha, which is an encyclopedia of Vaishnav thought. Ostensibly it was. But actually he was borrowing ideas from all the four sampradayas to eventually incorporate Vaishnava into his sampradaya. One of which, of course, was sannyas, which he inaugurated later. So when he was 31 years old, he wanted to follow not only his Guru Maharaj, but also his father in chanting 1 billion names of the Lord. 1 billion names means 15 hours a day chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, for 15 hours a day for 9 years and 4 months. So as soon as he finished that, he established his printing press. It was 1913 by now. And after the police had approved the establishment of a printing press, which I told you all about before, you wouldn't be printing any seditious literature. Oh, it's Hinduism. Oh, okay, that's all right. Not a revolution then. In 1914, Bhaktivinoda departed, giving him final verbal instructions as to what revival of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement would be. So you know what he said, final verbal instructions. He said, many people cannot follow the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. Make it easy for them by establishing Daiva Varnashram. Interesting. Daiva Varnashram, first one. Second one, to those that can listen, preach Shuddha Bhakti. Preach Shuddha Bhakti. But make sure everybody else isn't becoming degraded. You know, give them good morals, good ethics, good practices. You know, keep them on the Vedic side. Third instruction, develop Srimayapur. It's a really difficult thing to develop Mayapur. I mean, it's really out there. But under Prabhupada's holding to these instructions, Mayapur is developing into a city. And then finally, publish Vaishnava writings. There's a combination of all these things. Bhaktisiddhanta engaged in some pretty interesting preaching. Two of my favorites was the agricultural show. The agricultural show at which there was a fairground, wrestling matches. What's that got to do with preaching Shuddha Bhakti? Well, the point was is if you bring thousands of people to a place, then they'll hear Harinam while that's going on. The other was these dioramas that he established, these waxworks. It was a great part of Prabhupada's preaching. Prabhupada took people off book distribution to learn how to do these things, to make waxworks. It was a big part of what Prabhupada wanted. It's no more. It's been allowed to sort of disappear. But it was a big part of what Prabhupada wanted. Little tableaus of people, different preaching ensembles. Now it is in Delhi. You can find them in Delhi. And in the temple of the Vedic Planetarium, you'll find that. And of course, agricultural show. You could almost say that Janmashtami at the moment is sort of verging on that. We do need a wrestling match, though, here. I'd read this, and we had a wrestling match one time. We had brahmacharis wrestling. It's quite popular. And brahmacharis felt they were looked at, so we stopped it. But anyway, let's go very... In 1919, he established something called the Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha, which is what the organization was called. The Vishva Vaishnav Raj Sabha. And it's a bit of a mouthful. So it meant, of course, it was a rededication of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spreading the teachings, originally established by Six Goswamis, revived by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then revived once more by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now what happened was that the temple that he established by it. Today what's happening, of course, is that the building which they used in Alta Dinghy Street has been completely refurbished. And I don't know if you've been on the internet yet today, but if you have, you're a very bad person. But you will have seen Alta Dinghy Street is being opened today. And I went there a couple of years ago and they said, there's one old lady who lives there and we can't move in. She doesn't like us very much. That lady has now departed. They bought the, for an undisclosed price, they bought it. And they've restored it, not by slapping white marble all over it, but very tastefully restored it as it was in the 1800s. It's absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. It's in Alta Dinghy Street, and that's called Bhaktivinod Asan. That's where Bhaktivinod had a place. That's where the Vishvavaishnava Raj Sabha was, I think, re-established in 1919. But then there was another temple that began, and they called that temple Gaudiya Math. Then another temple was established and be called Gaudiya Math. So the Vishvavaishnava Raj Sabha, the organization, began establishing temples called Gaudiya Maths. And then the organization just began called the Gaudiya Math. So still today people say Gaudiya Math, but then a third name of the organization was the Gaudiya Mission. That's what eventually it became, the Gaudiya Mission. Anyway. First sannyasi created in 1920, and the temple that we now see at Chaitanya Math was built. The first Vyasa Puja was in 1924. Only when he was 50 did he have a Vyasa Puja. So Sundarananda Vidyavinod, who was sort of English educated, when the Guru got to 50, he said, let's have something called the Golden Jubilee. The Golden Jubilee. We call it the Golden Jubilee Utsav Festival. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, no, let's go back a little. So what they did was they rearranged that Vyasa Puja would not be on the birthday of Vyasadeva, which Vyasa Puja is the worship of Vyas, but it would be on the birthday of the Guru. So that's why in ISKCON we have the Vyasa Puja, not on Guru Purnima, but on the birthday of the Guru. He wanted that to be a more personal declaration of fidelity to the Guru. So that was the first Vyasa Puja in 1924. 1925, they were attacked. 600 of them were attacked by hundreds of people in Navadvip because he was becoming popular. And back in the 80s, we were also attacked by the, not only the village, but the local council. The national government tried to close this place down, and there was a big fight for 15 years. So if you do happen to try to establish Krishna consciousness in any town, don't think that there won't be resistance. But Prabhupada said resistance means you're having some success. When people push back, it means you're having an effect. Okay? If you're having a kirtan at 2 o'clock in the morning and someone bangs on the wall, don't think that's a sign of success. That's just a sign that you're being really annoying. Anyway, 1933, representatives of Thakur visit London, stay for 2 years, and establish a little house in Eastbourne. And the lady from the Eastbourne eventually moved to Cricklewood. That place is still there. 1922, of course, Prabhupada meets his Guru Maharaj on that rooftop, thereby kaboom, creating that explosion all over the world. And 1933, Prabhupada is initiated as Abhay Charanaravinda Das. Hare Krishna. So, much of what we do in ISKCON is a continuation of Prabhupada's service to his Gurudev. The way we dress, the way we eat, the way we talk, the funny way that we talk, actually, using highfalutin English words, these are all direct genetic connection to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The way we do Harinam and the way we print our books and just print more books and print more books and print more books and books, books, books. This is continuation of the time when there was no books. Eventually everybody will have a book, but until that day comes, we need to keep selling books. Let's not forget the Daiva Varnashram though, eh? That's also important. Let's not forget Mayapur. We haven't been there for 2 years. We all need to go to Mayapur. Who's never been to Mayapur? Oh, Hare Krishna. You have to take them, Sutapa. Look at them. They're Mayapurless. But they've got the tilak, they've got the knowledge, they've got the dhoti. They haven't been to Mayapur. Please take them. Someday. So, thank you very, very much for listening. It is now almost coming up to 9 o'clock. But there is no breakfast today. We are fasting. So let us continue feasting on discussion of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Thank you very much for listening. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to right hand in the air, left hand in the air. Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga.